on Twitter. Follow along. Use the handle at Eric_Scopel. Scopes, I think it's been about 5 weeks since we've chatted. How you hanging in there?
Oh, I'm doing all right, Steve. Has it really been that long? It feels like it was yesterday. It feels like it was more recent than that.
Yeah, time has a tendency to fly. Well, I guess since we're all surviving and still have jobs, technically we're enjoying it. So, yeah, it's been a couple days. It was a couple days before the Fiesta Bowl. So, there you go. All
right. Okay.
Let's get to football. This highly touted class adds a running back from San Diego, Byron Cardwell. We know Habibi Leikio transferred to Boise State. Verdell returns. Dye is back. Sean Dollars. So what could you tell us about this young guy, Cardwell, and at least how packed that running back room looks for 2021?
I really like Cardwell. He's a guy who kind of Oregon came on late for. It was one of those kind of weird things looking at the recruiting ranking and seeing, like, arguably the best running back on the West Coast was uncommitted during the early period. It wasn't clear kind of where he was leaning. It was kind of up in the air. It felt like maybe he'll leave the Pac-12 footprint. Maybe he'll land at UCLA. I think that was kind of what the talk was. And then Oregon jumped in, I think shortly after they had a decommitment receiver that opened up another offensive spot. And they got involved here. And now with, like you said, Habibi Leikio taking off and concluding his career at Boise State, and obviously with potentially losing Travis Dye and C.J. Verdell after 2021, a guy like Cardwell becomes really important, I think, in terms of what kind of figuring out the face of the position group is and kind of what it's going to look like, you know, post-2021. And again, 6'2" or 6'3", smooth runner, got some great breakaway speed. I love the vision. I think that's the thing that stands out the most. And somebody that they pulled from the San Diego area late in the process, really weren't overly involved until that point. And to kind of be able to do this, and I think one of the things I've written about and talk about a little bit over the last couple of days is just the fact that they were able to put this entire class together without any official visits, you know.
Yeah.
And for so long, Steve, how many times would you say, like, well, if Oregon can just get the kid on campus, we'll have a shot? Well, the reality is they didn't get any of these kids on campus, and they signed an incredible class, and Cardwell was one of the more recent ones that they grabbed late. And I think, I don't know if he really plays too much in 2021 just because you have Verdell and Dye back. And I think people are really excited about Sean Dollars too. And Trey Benson, a freshman running back who was hurt this past year, people speak very highly of him. But I think Cardwell is somebody who, again, when I guess in theory, both Verdell and Dye could come back in 2022 with the frozen windows. I think it's very unlikely that happens. But like by 2022, you kind of have to have that next wave of Oregon running backs because really Dye and Verdell have been the guys for almost half a decade now. And this will be their fourth season as the primary guys. And Cardwell could be one of those names along, I think, with Dollars and Benson. And they also added Seven McGee, another really highly regarded recruit, kind of shades of DeAnthony Thomas. With this kid, he signed in December, but you now are kind of seeing how this might come together, you know, in about a little over probably 18 months when they kind of have to get started with life post CJ and Travis. And I think if Cardwell's not the favorite to win the job at that point, he's probably like at least going to be playing a sizable role at some point, I would expect, based upon his talent and kind of the way the position looks at that time.
Another score seems to be Avante Dickerson. Looks like the top recruit in Nebraska, a corner. We know the secondary took a hit with the opt-outs before this season, and a lot of guys got experience. So kind of a similar question, the kind of player he is, and a nice supplement he'll be when you think of McKinley, Mikhail Wright, DJ James, and the rest.
Yeah, well, another one where they have a little bit more connection to Dickerson, despite him being from the middle of the country and not all that close to Eugene. Brad Chance, Oregon's cornerbacks coach, recruited Dickerson to Minnesota, where Dickerson was a verbal commitment for, I think, over a year, and then kind of backed out of that right around the early signing period in December. And Chance, who's now Oregon's corners coach, been at Minnesota, had recruited Dickerson there. It was kind of a logical fit to try to go, hey, this guy is coaching at a step up, probably, Oregon over Minnesota. I think that's probably safe to say, especially over local airwaves. Maybe it's less fair over in Minneapolis or something. But, but I think that kind of made sense, that kind of connection there with Chance and Dickerson. So, and again, another really, really big-time recruit. He's rated as one of the top 125 recruits in the country, regardless of position, eighth best corner And I think the thing that's really kind of notable in this class, Oregon signs three corner recruits that are all basically the same size, all between 6 foot and 6'1", and 165 and 170. So I think Chance clearly has kind of a type or a body type he was looking for and went out and grabbed some guys that really fit that. And I think, you know, you asked about the future of the position group. Like, I think corner, aside from quarterback, which is, I'm sure, something that we might talk about, or at least, you know, listeners are curious about, I think cornerback is really a position, as you noted, that kind of, there's some questions there. Mikhail Wright was first team all conference. Everybody kind of knows that name. Who plays opposite of him is, I think, one of the bigger question marks from a personnel perspective with this team, because you had Diomede Lenore and Thomas Graham start, again, kind of similar to C.J. Verdell and Travis Dye a second ago, where those guys were starters for like 3 to 4 seasons. They were kind of locked in the lineup. You kind of knew what you're getting there. Those guys are now both gone. Wright is a very logical replacement, obviously, at one spot. The other one is going to be either a D.J. James, a player who played, I don't know, maybe 20 reps, maybe 20 snaps a game last season, had some moments, but is still kind of, isn't, you know, certainly not that experienced. And then a bunch of guys who've literally never played at this level. A lot of really highly regarded guys. Dickerson and Jalen Davies and Darren Barkins are all in this class. Dickerson and Davies are both top 10 rated cornerback recruits in this class. You have Dante Manning, who's the highest rated recruit Oregon has ever signed in the defensive backfield. He was a former 5-star from Missouri from last year. He got hurt. We didn't see him at all in 2020. And so the position battle there is going to be pretty intriguing for my money. Like, you got Mikhail Wright at one spot, and the other one is probably going to be either a quote-unquote veteran in a redshirt sophomore in D.J. James, or maybe I guess he's a true sophomore now because I don't think the redshirt year applied, and then one of these younger guys, whether it's Manning, who's already been on campus for a year. Tri-Quiz Bridges is another name, and then you've got Dickerson, Davies, and Barkins. And I think we should know Barkins, lowest rated of the group, was a guy who ran a 4.43 electric time in December, and a player that I know that our 24/7 Sports national analysts really wanted to move up, but he didn't get to play football this last fall, so he kind of remains a 3-star, somebody who could have been ranked kind of in a similar range if he would have been given a chance for a year. So I think all three of these guys are names to know in 2021, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of them, or maybe two of them, are in the 2-deep. I don't know if they'll start, but they're going to be guys that are going to be called on probably sooner than a lot in this class.
Let's go from corner to quarterback. We know December, Ty Thompson, the old world quarterback from Gilbert, Arizona. And then, you know, like I said, since we spoke, you know, the Pac-12 title game and the Fiesta Bowl, Anthony Brown in the mix. He's back, obviously, Tyler Shuck. Eric, moving forward, what do you make of the quarterback spot, which, man, this could be hotly contested this spring and summer?
I said this recently, and I think it's true. I think this is the most, like, uncertain a quarterback competition has been entering a spring in a really long time. We had Rob Mosley on the show not that long ago. I asked him about that. He was thinking maybe back to, like, Justin Roper, Jeremiah Masoli, 2008 kind of year that this kind of situation has been, that maybe you go back further. And I think he also brought up like Jason Fife, Kellen Clemens. Like, I mean, not very frequently has there been like an all out quarterback competition at Oregon. Usually you kind of know who it's going to be. You know, obviously most recently you had like a Dakota Prukop start the season and Herbert beats him out eventually. And then Marcus Mariota was the other one before that, where it wasn't necessarily clear going into it, but I think everybody kind of figured he'd be the guy over Brian Bennett. Like, 2021, this year, I don't really have a great feel for it. And, you know, I asked Mark Cristobal towards the end of our media availability with him for signing day just about, like, is Thompson somebody who he thinks could compete for that job? And he said yes. And I'll read the rest of the quote. He said he's an exceptional talent and a guy who doesn't come around very often, and the excitement level around him is extremely high. And so you bring Ty Thompson to the mix. You've got Tyler Shuck back. You've got Anthony Brown back. You've got two players who were who sat out last year as freshmen, and Jay Butterfield and Robbie Ashford, who are both 4-star recruits as well. And you've got a heck of a quarterback battle for the spring and into the fall. And I probably lean towards you'd start the season with one of these older guys between Shuck or Brown as a starter, but I wouldn't be surprised or totally count out the possibility of this being another Justin Herbert replacing Dakota Prukop thing, where maybe it's Shuck or one of the other freshmen who eventually kind of wins out and takes the job. And I don't know. I think we talked about this prior to the Fiesta Bowl, but my perspective hasn't changed. Like, I thought Tyler Shuck was really, really impressive at times in 2020. I think you can't discount how he started the season. He had some really nice moments, but I think it's really hard to argue that he finished the way a quarterback should to then be given the reins back the next season. Like, and that's the other thing here, is there's an actual incumbent starter on the roster, and this is what makes it so bizarre, who's certainly not locked in as a starting quarterback. And I would probably say, like, first day of spring practice, I'm guessing Tyler Chuck probably gets most of the first team reps. But from there, it's kind of wide open. And Cristobal even said he's looking forward to, this is another quote from kind of the quarterback in the spring. He said, I'm looking forward to watching the battle and really structuring practice so that there's fair opportunity. And I think that last part's kind of notable of, like, I think they're going to try to do everything they can to ensure that, unlike in 2020, which is a weird year, where maybe they didn't know who their best quarterback was, that they figure it out earlier rather than later.
Talking Duck football with Eric Scopel, 24/7 Sports. Obviously, we finally got to chat with the new defensive coordinator, Tim DeRuiter. They made it official last week. Like Joe Moorhead on offense. Now, Cristobal has two coordinators who have head coaching experience. And certainly, Coach DeRuiter seems really fired up to be here. What do you make of, again, going outside the program and all DeRuiter brings to the table?
I think it checks a lot of the boxes. You know, I think there was some, you know, when Andy Avalos left, I think it was going to be hard to upgrade. I don't think I would argue that they necessarily upgraded in terms of, like, maybe, like, the ceiling of what Tim DeRuiter is. But I think Tim DeRuiter is a coach who's very established and has a real track record of turning around defenses. This isn't even a defense that needs to be turned around.
Right.
But you look at what he did at Cal and what he did at Texas A&M and what he did before that at, like, stops at Nevada. I think he coached the Army. It's just like you look at the numbers, the stats, it's like the year before they're pretty middling to bad, and then that next year, within 2 years, they're really good. So I think that it makes a lot of sense. He's a little bit of a more experienced coach than and Andy Avalos, a guy who's been a coordinator for a couple decades before, is a head coach at Fresno State and won a couple Mountain West championships down there over Boise State. People know how difficult that is. So somebody who's a pretty established coach. And so, like you said, I mean, it's interesting having a head coach in Mario Cristobal, obviously, but then your offensive coordinator is a coach who was just a head coach at Mississippi State, and your defensive coordinator is a coach who was just the head coach at Fresno State. And that's pretty veteran, pretty high-end caliber coaches. And then, oh, Bobby Williams is a special teams coordinator. He was a coach at Michigan State. So the kind of the coaching excellence on the staff is pretty unparalleled. I liked a lot of what DeRuiter said. I think you can kind of expect to see the defense look fairly similar from, like, a just a schematic perspective from what he said. One thing that was really notable was that he also coached Von Miller at Texas A&M and kind of drew some comparisons to Kayvon Thibodeau with Miller and said they're going to he's going to try to utilize Thibodeau in a similar manner, move him around a lot, kind of try to confuse some offenses and just unleash him. And as we know, Von Miller went on to win the Butkus Award as a top outside linebacker, was an All-American a couple of seasons there under DeRuiter's tutelage. So if they're able to pull out the same kind of thing with Thibodeau, I mean, that right there alone would probably kind of be all you need to see from a hire like this.
And not to mention, Miller was a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, that's important, too.
Let's get to a couple final questions and move to the hardwood. You know, last weekend was just weird. I mean, with both programs on pause,
yeah,
there were postponements from Thursday through Monday, the women on Friday. Now the guys look like they're going to play the Washington schools, starting with the Cougs. They haven't taken the court. It seems like they played like one or two games in a month. But what we learned today, looks like Richardson's cleared. Duarte will be in there. So for all the craziness, what kind of shape do you think Duck Men's Hoops is in moving forward?
Well, you're not wrong in terms of they've had a lot of games postponed recently. Five. Sorry, I'm just going down the schedule there. I forgot how many it was. They've played. Their most recent game was against Oregon State on January 23rd, and then before that, January 9th. That's almost a full month they played two times. And that's just the way this works. And I think it's admirable that these programs are continuing to work through this. I also think it sort of suggests how complicated the virus is and how hard it is to maneuver through this. But point, you know, aside from those points, like, yeah, I think the positive here is you do get five games where Will Richardson would not have played, and now he's going to be able to, when they hopefully make these games up, and it's no guarantees that'll happen. Again, I'll made that pretty clear today. There's no guarantee that these games are going to be played. They want them to be played. But you now are at least going to have fewer games where you're without a Will Richardson or where you're without a Chris Duarte like they were when they lost the last time out. Last time they played was against Oregon State at home, a team that's not very good. And Oregon lost by 11 points, but they were out without Richardson. They were without Duarte. That was without LJ Figueroa. And Foley Dante's been out for the season. That's like four of your top five or six guys weren't available in that game. Well, they're now going to be moving forward with all those guys back. And I think that's significant in terms of trying to get some momentum here into what is kind of, I guess, a belated stretch run of the season. And I think it's, from my perspective, like, you're going to learn quite a bit about how quickly this team can meld and gel. I mean, because you can say what you want about having Will Richardson kind of waiting around ready to go. Well, the team was on pause from, like, practice perspective. So it's not like they had opportunities even behind the scenes in these games, you know, when they were sitting out for this period of time to really work on that sort of thing. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to see the fact they're playing tomorrow against Washington State. What do they have that game? What do they have against Washington? Washington's not very good. The Cougars are actually a little better this year than the Huskies, which is kind of strange. But
it is.
and maybe by not a little, maybe it's a lot. But I think the fact that they're not jumping in against UCLA, who, again, I think they've had that game postponed like three different times, it feels like. So I think you have to be encouraged by, like, I guess if you want to spin it glass half full, the angle is, hey, you're going to have your guys back down the stretch here. But the negative here is you lost some opportunity for some of these players, I guess, to kind of work together, build something. And you only have now so many opportunities. And assuming these games aren't, there aren't further postponements, the Ducks only have nine regular season games remaining before they get to the Pac-12 tournament. And this is a season where, hey, they've only played 12 games. So, you know, you kind of hope they make up some of these postponed games. They're trying to do that. That's the plan. But you're also running further and further towards the Pac-12 tournament, which is set for March 10th, and there aren't necessarily a ton of game, you know, a ton of days or of openings to really make up those games.
Yeah, you can't play as many basketball games as you do baseball games, and the fact that
that's
5 weeks from now is insane. Folks, he's Eric Scopel of 24/7 Sports, always hits us with a ton of great information and insight on Twitter at Eric_Scopel. Scopes, always appreciate your time and insight, my friend. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Another 5 weeks is perfect.
Have a good one, Eric. Take it easy.
All right, talk to you. Bye.